what, four times?
Committee will come to order. There being a quorum present. And the minutes from February 27th.
I'd like to move the minutes, Chairman.
Representative Lunan moves the minutes. Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes from February 27th, please signify by saying aye. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Minutes are barely approved. Members, today we have a presentation by DHS on their IT system and the modernization of that. And so with that, I'm going to invite DHS down to the testifiers table. Welcome to the committee. And if you could introduce yourself to the committee, that would be wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Michelle Weber, and I'm the Business Solutions Officer at the Department of Human Services.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having us today. My name is Greg Paling. I'm the Chief Business Technology Officer for Minute, representing DHS and Minsure.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today we're going to be providing two presentations for you. We're going to provide an overview of the Department of Human Services IT modernization efforts, as well as an overview of the Minute at DHS work. So we'll start with an overview of our modernization efforts. As we provide this overview to you about our modernization efforts, we wanted to provide some context related to the systems that the agency is working to modernize. There are several major technology systems that are part of these modernization efforts. They support the administration and delivery of human services, including healthcare, child support, cash assistance, food assistance, as well as foster care and our direct care and treatment services. In addition to the major systems that we're working to modernize, DHS has other, what might be considered smaller systems that are used to support the critical delivery of human services. In total, then, are all of the applications that are supported or used by the Department of Human Services are 375 different technical applications. The systems have a significant user base that includes 31,000 county, tribal, and state workers, as well as over 200,000 healthcare providers. They support a variety of human services that are delivered to over 2.8 million people in the state of Minnesota. Our direct care and treatment system supports services to over 13,000 clients that are served annually in 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week settings. And we'll speak to this in more detail during the second part of our presentation. However, wanted to provide the committee some context from a financial perspective. DHS in 2017 spent $134 million in the support of all of those different technical systems. Of that amount, the federal government covers approximately 52% or $70 million in costs, and those costs are reflective of staffing, hardware, software, software license fees, as well as professional technical services. As we approach modernization, it's easy for people to recognize that the age of our technology systems requires them to be improved and upgraded. However, over the last several years, we've recognized that we also want our system modernization efforts to support a transformation in how services are provided. We are wanting to support a new model of integrated and person-centered services in our modernization efforts. So in addition to changing the technology to support the delivery of person-centered services, there are other factors that are also contributing to the necessity to update and modernize our technical platforms that all of our systems exist on. They have been built over time, many of them being over 20 years old. They were built to meet a very specific program need and to serve a very specific program, and it's really difficult to have those systems talk to each other. The reality is that, as I mentioned already, these systems were developed over 20 years ago, many of them in technology that at the time what was prevalent was the use of a floppy disk to save or transfer information. And in many cases, we're losing the expertise that's necessary to maintain these systems on an ongoing basis. In some cases, the programming language, it's very difficult to find schools that are still teaching the programming language that some of these systems were developed in. Also, as we look to make changes that are necessary to comply with legislative changes, federal requirements, or new policy that's implemented, it currently takes us a long time and a significant effort to make those changes in our existing technology systems. And for direct care and treatment, we have federal requirements that require us to move towards an electronic health record. In addition, there's an opportunity before us to maximize our use of federal funding in that for many of these efforts, there's up to 90% federal resources available to support the modernization efforts. We've organized our modernization efforts around four different areas. Not each of these represent a technical system. So the integrated service delivery system is a strategy that looks to combine the functionality that currently exists in multiple technologies in the state to support a more integrated and person-centered experience for the individuals we serve. Also, I'll point out that our direct care and treatment is really not a system per se, but it's about the technical support that's necessary for our facilities. As I mentioned, related to the integrated service delivery system, this is a strategy, not a specific system, and it'll be a combination of replacing, modernizing, as well as integrating several IT systems to provide a more holistic and person-centered experience for the individuals in the human services area. The Minnesota Eligibility and Technology System, METS, was the department's first endeavor to modernize systems. And we're continuing to invest resources in improving the user experience in METS and continuing to develop additional functionality. Our third effort related to the Medicaid Management Information, our MMIS system, that system currently supports over $12 billion annually in payments to providers. And we're in the early planning phases. We'll speak in more detail to each of these efforts in a few slides, but this is just a general overview for you. And as I've previously mentioned with our direct care and treatment program, what we're looking to do is not necessarily modernize an existing system, but fully develop an existing system we have that currently only partially provides some of the client data served in direct care and treatment facilities in a technical system. A lot of that information is still maintained in paper form. For all of these efforts, we're recognizing that this is an incredibly large and complex undertaking that we're pursuing, and each of these will be a multi-year effort. As we move forward, we're really wanting to work with the legislature also in developing an understanding about what ways we might be able to simplify programs, which will both improve the experience for the people we serve, as well as make the technical development more efficient and effective. So now a little more detail on the integrated service delivery system. As I said, it's a strategy that combines multiple separate systems right now and services that are provided to people in the human services delivery system. Our ultimate goal for what we refer to as ISDS, the Integrated Service Delivery System, is for counties and tribes and DHS to work together on the development of this. And our hope is that it will lead to more integrated program eligibility determination, easier ways for individuals to enroll in services, and it will provide support, technology that supports coordination of services for the people who are being served, so to leading to better outcomes for those people. These efforts we recognize are going to be incredibly challenging due to the differing program and eligibility requirements that we have across the multitude of human services programs. And that's why, in addition to planning for new technology, we're looking across all those programs to see if there are opportunities for alignment and simplification. We're also working very closely with the counties and are starting efforts to work with tribes on this system as well. And from a historical standpoint, the history of the integrated service delivery system really began in earnest with legislation that was passed in 2011. That legislation led to the department issuing a request for information to look at potential commercial off-the-shelf products that might support the delivery of integrated services. And in 2013, the legislature appropriated funds to start planning for and to start work towards the development of an integrated service delivery system. prior to the legislative activity that took place in 2011 and 2013, the department had begun to recognize that the age of these systems required them to be upgraded to more modern technology. And we also wanted to be intentional about the approach and not just upgrade the technology, but develop the technology in a way that would support how human services will be delivered in the future, not how human services was delivered 20 years ago. The department has worked with counties and is in the early phases of beginning to formalize relationships with tribes to define the service delivery system for the future. And in our early efforts related to the integrated service delivery system, we've established the technical infrastructure to support modernizing several of our major legacy systems. We've also continued to invest in improvements to the MET system and systems such as MinChoices, and we're working in partnership with the counties and tribes to define what might a business model look like in the future. As part of the integrated service delivery system, we've also launched a new system for our state medical review team process, which is the process that reviews the individual's request for Social Security benefits. The projects that are currently underway include a pilot in Hennepin and Dakota County to look at assessing what individuals' needs are and ensuring that the referrals are to the appropriate programs that will meet their needs. We are also working on several data projects that includes the replacement of our data warehouse as well as data analytics tools and reporting tools that can be used as we move forward with our modernization efforts. And then finally, we just recently submitted a request to the federal government to pursue planning activities related to replacing our child support system. And one of the requirements from the federal government is that we do a feasibility study to determine what's the best approach and what's the best technical solution to pursue for the replacement of the child support system. So this system, the Integrated Service Delivery System, is intended to replace MACSA, which is the system that currently provides cash and food assistance as well as healthcare eligibility for some of the population, PRISM, which is our child support system, and our social services information system, which provides adult and child protection case management functionality. Also included in these efforts are the Minnesota Electronic Child Care System, which is MEC Squared, our child care assistance technical system, and we are working on replacing our licensing system as well. The first phases of the licensing system modernization include offering online services for applications, the collection of fees and fines, and tracking related to incidents or investigations that are occurring. And the population, it initially will be used with the population that is providing home and community-based services. As I previously mentioned, the financing for this is being supported through 90% federal resources. And I'll now turn it over to Mr. Paling, who's going to speak with you in a little more detail about our efforts related to METS and our MMIS modernization efforts.
So moving to the Minnesota Eligibility Technology System, which is known as METS, I'm going to call it METS. As Ms. Weber mentioned earlier, the METS system serves as the first step in providing an integrated eligibility system and has been the first effort to modernize our major technology systems with DHS. This system supports both DHS and MnSure operations. For DHS, it determines eligibility for Minnesota Care and Medicaid recipients. Currently, federal funding supports up to 90% of funding of the DHS system development costs. It has a significant customer base of over 900,000 people for DHS programs. Working through a governance structure that includes DHS, MnSure, and the counties, there has been progress made on METS, and a targeted focus has been to work on improvements that automate processes and improve information to healthcare recipients. Some examples of these improvements are on the slide that you're looking at right now. The system is continually being improved to enhance, to address system defects, and increase the functionality available in the system. We've learned a lot through the challenges that we faced during the implementation of METS up to this point, particularly how difficult it is to design and implement a technical system that addresses multiple and complex eligibility requirements. We are applying those lessons learned as we embark on the development of the integrated services delivery system, as Ms. Weber was saying. Examples of what we are able to do differently now in METS and with ISDS, specifically because we are not under the same time constraints we were with METS, include we're engaging users from the very beginning. That includes county users. We're able to plan and develop the system at a pace that fits within the capacity to manage both the business and technical changes that will accompany it. And we are also learning from other states who have had success, both in transforming to person-centered services and implementing new technology to support those efforts, similar technology to what we're implementing. Moving to the next slide there, this is the roadmap. This is a picture of the 2018 roadmap for METS. This was recently approved by the Executive Steering Committee for METS, which is a organization that meets monthly, and it's a public organization. To just briefly explain what you're looking at, along the top there are four plan releases. When we first implemented METS, we were not doing plan releases. We were releasing quite frequently. Now we have four planned quarterly releases. The items identified in the middle represent ongoing work. And in the bottom right-hand side of the roadmap, there is an indication of the work that we're working on right now that will be deployed like in 2019 or later. Moving to the Medicaid Management Information System, known as MMIS, this modernization effort will take several years to complete and will be approached in phases, with the first phase focused on establishing the technical infrastructure to support a modernized MMIS, along with improvements to the functionality of the current system. We have many efforts currently underway to modernize our Medicaid Management Information System. Some of these initiatives will be completed in the next few years, such as provider screening and enrollment, and doing infrastructure upgrades to the front-end system, which is called MINUTES. The federal government covers 90% of the cost of these modernization efforts as long as we continue to align with their development methodologies and work to improve our Medicaid Information Technology Architecture, known as MITA. While this effort is separate from ISDS, it is not being done in isolation of what we're doing with ISDS. We collaborate regularly, and we look at technology wins that can meet both needs. It will support similar goals such as improving duplication and allowing us to more quickly respond to changes. It will also have the technology support business process redesign efforts that occur as we look at what business functions are supported by our systems and work to align those functions across various programs.
And Mr. Chair and members, I'll pick back up here with our direct care and treatment modernization efforts. Our facilities, our direct care and treatment facilities, as I mentioned previously, provide 24-hour day and 7-day-a-week services. This requires that there's technical support available on that schedule as well. And in addition to the electronic health records initiative that we have underway, there are also other things that are unique to the concept that we have facilities. So we have to think about security within those facilities, things that require technology to ensure that there's access and that we have secure facilities for both the people that are working there as well as the individuals who are being served. The electronic health record, as I mentioned already, is right now done in a software and in partnership with a vendor called MetSmart, as well as the Department of Human Services, and Minute is working to fully modernize and add all of the components that are necessary to fully achieve an electronic health record. We also depend on services from the Minute Enterprise Agency with our facilities, as well as Minute at DHS. Funding for the modernization efforts currently underway are supported through a combination of state appropriations as well as federal resources. In a few slides, we'll speak a little bit more to the METS financing, but wanted to provide you all with an overview of the funding that's been provided for the Integrated Service Delivery System as well as MMIS. In 2013, as I mentioned before, the legislature appropriated $24 million over the course of 4 years. How that broke down was that in 2014, there was approximately $12.7 million was appropriated. In 2015, there was $3.6 million appropriated. And in 2016, $5.9 million. And then beginning in 2017, approximately $1.7 million was appropriated to support efforts towards developing an integrated service delivery system. A portion of that 2013 funding remained available as we moved into state fiscal year 2018, and so we're continuing to be used to support our current efforts we have underway for the integrated service delivery system. With MMIS modernization, the planning was initially financed by the Department of Human Services through internal resources available from our systems account, General Reserve. From that account, we utilized $7.2 million in state resources for the purposes of planning. And then during the 2017 legislative session, the governor's budget included a request for both integrated service delivery system work as well as MMIS modernization efforts. And ultimately, at the end of the session, there was a $29 million over the course of 4 years appropriation that broke down to $8.6 million available in both fiscal year 18 and 19, as well as $5.8 million being available beginning in fiscal year 2020 for these efforts. We've mentioned several times the fact that we're taking advantage of the federal enhanced funding that's available for these efforts. And for MMIS efforts, after we apply what's called a cost allocation methodology, it equates to about 83% of the total costs for MMIS modernization being covered with federal resources. What this means from a practical perspective is that an investment of about $4 million in state resources can leverage an additional $21 million in federal resources, meaning that there's a $25 million buying power from that state investment. For ISDS, currently there's a waiver that's in place from the Federal Office of Management and Budget, and that waiver allows us to leverage up to 90% federal funding for many of the efforts we have underway with the Integrated Service Delivery System. That waiver is currently scheduled to expire on December 31st of this year, and after that waiver expires, our efforts for the Integrated Service Delivery System modernization, the federal contribution to that, will change from anywhere between 50% up to 90%, depending on the benefiting program that we're undertaking the modernization effort for. This chart provides an overview of the METS financing. The METS system is both a system that is operational and there continues to be development work in that system. This chart provides an overview of the historical financing for the METS system and was specifically requested by the committee. It dates back to 2011, and it includes representations that are beyond just the cost of the METS system. If you review the first bar for each fiscal year, that provides you an overview of the breakdown of funding that's available for developing functionality within the METS system. The funding sources for that currently include a small remaining amount of federal funds that was available from the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight, as well as federal Medicaid funding, state appropriations, and premium withholds. The second bar for each fiscal year on the chart provides an overview of the operational costs that have been incurred in the METS system. The operational costs are supported with federal Medicaid funding, state appropriations, as well as premium withholds. And I want to note that the third bar in the chart is representative of MNSURE operational costs, so not necessarily directly related to the METS system. Transitioning now from the overview of each of our modernization efforts, I'd like to speak a little bit to what we're doing to work towards success with this. We fully recognize that this work is really huge, and it's going to be an incredibly complicated endeavor. And we're also working to be very intentional about the inclusion of our users, counties, tribes, the people we serve, as we move forward with these modernization efforts. As a result of that, last fall, the department and Minute reached out to counties in an effort to bring together a group of individuals who would work on developing a 5-year modernization strategic plan. Going into that strategic planning process, we conducted a survey of end users, and overwhelmingly, the results of that survey indicated that these systems are in need of modernization. Over the course of 5 days, this group met and developed an agreed-upon vision for all of the department's modernization efforts and identified 4 key initiatives that we should focus on as we move forward. For each key initiative, there were explicit goals identified as well as strategies. And we're right now in the process of developing tactical plans for how we will implement each of those strategies that were identified by the group. The agreed-upon vision that the group developed is that DHS modernization efforts, for all of our modernization efforts, is that all Minnesotans have access to the full range of integrated person-centered human services through comprehensive and sustainable technology. The four areas of focus that the group identified were people, and the description for that is engaging the human services community's expertise to build an inclusive, accessible delivery system which empowers Minnesotans to improve their lives. This is really about both the people we serve as well as the individuals who are working on the modernization efforts. For communication, the intention is to establish an inclusive, transparent communication approach and to maintain that will help us to maintain an improved human service delivery system. Overwhelmingly, in our survey, we heard from the end users that they wanted an opportunity to contribute and provide input into our efforts. And so under that Communication Key initiative, we'll be working not just on communicating out the progress that's being made, but also forums in which we're making sure we're gathering input and feedback into the efforts that we're undertaking. Innovation was another key initiative, and the description for that is enriching human services systems by sharing, encouraging, and being open to new ideas, technologies, and processes at all levels. The group really wanted to recognize that there's a lot of innovation that's occurring out there, and we should take advantage of that innovation that currently exists. And not just innovation in technology, but also innovation in how services are provided. And then finally, they identified a key initiative around governance. The description for that is to partner through an accountable decision-making structure to ensure that technologies support the person-centered structure, objectives. Needing to formalize a mechanism under which, in particular, the counties are actively engaged and members of the decision-making process as we move forward with our modernization efforts. Another effort that we've undertaken over the last year was the development of an integrated services business model. And this was developed in partnership with the counties and White Earth Nation. The goal was to develop an integrated person-centered business model that could inform the technical development. So it wasn't meant to be as specific as translating to system-specific system requirements, but was meant to be an agreed-upon model across all 87 counties and that we could also use as we worked with the tribes and across the various program areas. The project team recognized that they wanted to be sure that it worked for staff, but the primary focus was on the people that are served in the human services delivery system. The project also was not intended to be constrained by what they thought technology could or couldn't do, as well as what current program requirements might be in place. They really wanted to look at what is the model for delivering services and then take a step back and look at how can technology be developed in a way that will support this. To develop this model, the project team connected with leading-edge programs throughout the country to learn about best practices. They also considered existing feedback that existed from the people that are served in the human services system. They conducted a literature review, and they made multiple site visits at counties throughout Minnesota that are already working towards delivering integrated services, and also did a site visit with the White Earth Nation. In addition to the literature review and site visits, the group also received a technical assistance grant from the American Public Human Services Association. That group provided technical assistance in the form of helping the group define what their future state was and also looking at what would it take to implement this. Through that technical assistance grant, the project team was also connected with work that's happening in counties in Wisconsin, California, and Ohio, who were also recipients of that technical assistance grant. So as a result, the model that was ultimately developed was informed by both work that's happening in other states as well as work that's happening here in Minnesota. This provides just a general overview of the components that are included in the model. The intention is that, as I mentioned previously, that the model would be focused on the people that are served. And what it's meant to convey is that each of these components would be present to the people who are participating in the human services program. There would be a screening that's available to get to root cause. So if an individual is seeking out assistance for food, it's looking at what else might be happening within the family that is leading to their need for food assistance. It's also looking to provide referrals not just to state programs or county programs, but also community-based programs that would be available, and do combined eligibility determination, as well as create mechanisms by which service coordination can occur for both the workers who are working with the people as well as the individuals. The business model is intended to be broad and flexible enough to fit all of the various DHS programs, and it's also intended to be flexible enough for the specific way in which it's implemented to be determined by the county or tribe that's implementing it. In addition to this high-level overview that you see on the screen, there are additional detailed elements to this model that I didn't bring today but would be happy to share with the committee if there is interest. The second component to it is a flow of what it actually looks like for the people who are being served. How do they work through each components of this integrated services business model? The third aspect looks at what the experience is for the worker who's working with the individual, and then the final aspect of the model begins to identify what types of technology tools would need to be available to support this integrated person-centered delivery system. In conclusion with the first part of our presentation, as progress is made on each of these system transformation and modernization efforts, the department is working in partnership with Minute, the counties and tribes, as well as others, to accomplish our shared vision of integrated person-centered services. A major piece of this is to focus on and understand what it's like for the people that we serve and what the people we serve are interested in. Last winter, we conducted a session under a Bush Foundation grant that we had received where we invited in people who are working more directly with individuals to provide input into how can technology support human services in the future. A unique opportunity exists for us with the time-limited additional federal resources that we have available. And a current challenge that is going to remain into the future is how do we balance the changes that are necessary in our existing legacy systems over our goals to develop more modernized technology systems. We need to work in partnership with the counties and tribes and the people we serve, as I've mentioned, but we're also interested in working in partnership with the legislature as you consider future changes to understand the implications to our existing systems as well as opportunities that modernization may be providing us. As Mr. Paling previously mentioned, we've learned a lot through the challenges that we're faced with the implementation of METS, and we're making a very concerted effort to learn from that experience and to make sure we're being very intentional from the beginning in terms of engaging our end users in the development of these modernized technologies, and also to develop it at a pace, leveraging things like piloting the implementation of new technology that will help us be more successful as we move forward. So, Mr. Chair, this concludes the first portion of our presentation. If you'd like, we could take questions now, or we could move on to the second portion.
Ms. Weber, I think we're going to take some questions at this point just because they're probably fresh in people's minds. And so far I have Representative Loeffler and Gruenhagen. And so, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our guests. You're taking on a big project, and we appreciate and know the need for it. But as I listened carefully, at the beginning you talked about, I kept hearing the word simplification, and I heard a statement that we're not building the system for the system we've had for the past 20 years, but for the future. And yet I don't see, as we walk through the components, really that as a critical step within it. I know when Wisconsin did their eligibility system, they did a major effort with their legislature as a partners to simplify eligibility, which dramatically reduced the complexity of the programming, made it much more user person friendly. And I don't see that pause in any of this development for you to be coming to us with ways that we can streamline. For example, even just in eligibility for medical assistance, I think we have one of the most complicated systems in the world. And I think both parties' perspectives have contributed to that. If one side had an extra, $1.5 million, they try and figure out how far that could go to get some more people covered or some conditions covered from testimony they'd heard. And another group might say we need to put up a few more hurdles because we think some people are slipping through that maybe don't really need it. In the end, we ended up with a really complicated system. And can you tell us a little bit about how that's factoring in as you're doing planning for the stuff already, but you've got a lot of stuff lined up in the future, and what does that mean for us as policymakers?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, yes, we've intentionally undergone within the department efforts to, first of all, identify all of the different programs that we administer and to make sure we have a full awareness of what all the different state and federal requirements are associated with that. There are efforts underway within the agency to look at simplifying within programs, and now we want to make efforts to look across the silos of the programs. Approximately a year ago, we had a committee that included county members as well as individuals from the Department of Human Services that looked at strategies that we might be able to pursue in terms of working with the legislature to pursue program simplification. We haven't at this point identified specific simplification initiatives that we want to pursue, but as I mentioned, we're very interested in working with the legislature on that, and that's one of our goals for this year, is to get our arms around what are the things that we could simplify and how can we partner with the legislature, whether it's to request changes to statutes or if we need to apply for federal waivers. Another activity that took place in January and ideas that were generated there was that some of the complexity may not necessarily be in law or in federal regulations, but could be in policies in terms of how different things were implemented. And so that's another thing that folks indicated that we need to take a look at. As I mentioned, we're in the very early phases of developing the technology. We're focusing right now on developing what that business model is for integrated services, and we've done some technology to perform very explicit functions, but not things that are looking at like integrated case management or integrated eligibility. So we're wanting to take the time before we develop that technology solution to look at ways in which we can simplify in those areas.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do think it's important for you to have discussions with all of us on that. I mean, it's not just about connecting the silos, it's we have too many silos. And we've been involved in discussions with the department on a bipartisan basis with advocacy groups and providers about, you know, why do we have all these different waiver programs? And wouldn't we do better just having one waiver program that everybody gets their needs met based on a uniform assessment, which we've already started implementing, instead of having people trying to game the system to get into one waiver versus the other, and having people with dual diagnosis or complicated lives really falling through the cracks because they don't fit very well in either one of them. And so I worry that you're going to be programming the silos to talk to each other rather than melding the silos together. And the other thing is I think that we really need to hear some reassurance from you that the system in all of its components will have the flexibility that we need, because I think everyone around this table has run into a fiscal note that kills a really good idea that might have bipartisan idea, because it's going to take us $75,000 or $350,000 in two positions to reprogram the computers, and we can't do it for at least 4 years. And that's not the basis on which we want to be able to have a dynamic, responsive government to the needs of the people. And we have just seen that over and over again, that programs that we're ready to agree to and lead on are put on the back burner because we're told they have to wait, that we don't have any computer resources, or the computer bill is so high that it negates the benefits to that person. And if we're really person-centered, we need to hear you're going to build some real flexibility into that, because that's a real stumbling block for me, and I see other people around the table nodding.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. Yeah, thanks for your presentation, Ms. Weber. You know, I find myself in complete agreement with Representative Loeffler in terms of simplification before we do implementation. And, you know, just a couple of concerns that have been voiced in the past, and I'll just mention Minsher first. A former Minsher board member wrote an article that was published in the local paper here in Minneapolis, and he basically said the vision of the IT under Minsher was unrealistic, okay, in terms of bringing the public programs together with the private sector, melding it all together, and then putting it out there. And we know the amount of problems that came out of that, okay? And the cost, I mean, according to our information last session, we were over $400 million just on the Minshew operation. And, you know, so I just encourage you to keep, you know, do what Representative Loeffler says. Let's work together, simplify things, and let's not just create some great big vision that we think we're going to solve all the problems at one time and then wind up with something that doesn't work very well and costs millions of dollars. Just one other question, Mr.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. The other thing, you work with Min Lars, too, correct?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunlund, I do not.
Oh.
I work just with the Department of Human Services.
All right.
Representative Grunhagen.
Question, so. But do you, just on my previous comment, do you see what I'm saying about government coming with too large of a vision and trying to solve all the problems with one fell swoop versus being more practical and doing some of the things that Representative Loeffler talked about?
Ms. Weber, I'll give her an opportunity.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. Yeah, we do appreciate that. We want to make sure that while we have a very aggressive vision, that we're very intentional and thoughtful about how do we actually achieve that vision. And it might be through small incremental steps versus a large endeavor that is kind of a one solution to achieve that vision.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And well, to that point and Representative Loeffler's point, there's a reason why we're talking about this in 2018 and not 18 years ago. It's because we can't get it done through this path. That's one. We're way behind. And it's interesting because I had constituents up today, and we're talking about a few things, this being one of them. They're asking about information systems. And I told them what the meeting was about, and they said, haven't you learned anything? They said, rolling out Minshew was a debacle. Rolling out Minlars is a debacle. Now you're exploring to do something similar? You know, I guess what can I tell my constituents as far as what have we learned and how can we trust this being rolled out in a way not to repeat the past?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, as we've mentioned, some of the things that we're doing with these modernization efforts, first of all, we're not under the same circumstances we were under when METS was rolled out. There were timelines that were imposed upon us that were beyond the department's control, and the technology was rolled out sooner than it should have been. I think everyone has acknowledged that, and there wasn't adequate time to train the end users. So as we're moving forward with our modernization efforts, we're first of all engaging the end users at the very beginning. What do they need from the technology, and how should it be designed in a way that will support their needs? Also, the concept of piloting it, and rather than a big bang approach that where everything goes out at one time and there's no way to turn back from what you've implemented or launched. Those are the types of things we're wanting to be very intentional about. So we are making a very concerted effort to learn from some of the challenges that have been faced with these other major system development projects.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, Mr. Chairman, those timelines were not imposed by the legislature. Those were self-imposed or through the administration. And I guess right now I'm in the camp of fool me once. It's going to take a lot to convince me to be able to support something going forward as far as funding just because of our past track record. So we've got a lot of repairs to make here.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I share some equal concerns to Representative Hamilton based on the past experience, and I'm curious, can you give me the – let's just take METS. Let's take one of the systems. I, too, had constituents in, county constituents, and it was the top of their concern list today, when it would be finished, and would we have data matching done? So I have a couple of questions in that regard. On one of your slides, page seven, you quote in the middle circle that streamlining the process has reduced the time it takes to add a household member by 30 minutes. How much time does it take to add a new member?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I do have that. I believe I have that information with me. Let me, do you know? Okay. I'll let Mr. Paling take the answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, It's been reduced down from an hour to between 10 and 15 minutes.
10 and 15 minutes. Thank you.
Representative Haley.
For the Total Met system, can you tell me the total number of users or customers that you serve compared to the amount of staff in this IT that takes to run Mets or works in the Mets area to the dollar amount that it takes to run it plus what it takes to fix it? And what I would like to know, maybe from our nonpartisan staff later, if we can get that data from you, comparative numbers from the private sector. We all know insurance is very complicated, and we have private sector industries that deal with the same type of complexity. And I would like to have something to gauge to Representative Hamilton's point before I can make a decision whether these are smart investments. And so I would like a comparison to the private sector with those same figures. In your words, you said this is a huge and complicated endeavor. We have had failures, massive failures at the state in other huge and complicated endeavors, and I don't want to see us have another one. So I don't know if you have those numbers today, again, on the number of customers, the amount of staff, and the amount of money.
Mr. Paling, Ms. Weber, who wants to take a shot at that?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the number of customers, I believe, is 900,000. Is that correct?
That is correct for DHS.
Yes, for DHS programs. The number of Minute staff that are supporting the MET system, I would have to defer to Representative Paling, or to Mr. Paling. And in terms of the funding for METs, the overall operational costs for METs over the course of its inception is $109 million has been spent from the operational standpoint, and then from the development standpoint, there's been $304 million.
Thank you.
Representative Dean M.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in terms of the last year for fiscal year 18, I think over the summer there was a memo that came out that looked at fiscal year 18 for federal fiscal year 18 spending for within the program. And for ISDS, it was about $134 million with 120 federal and around 15 state. And then for METS on top of that, about five state and about 50 federal. Does that sound about right? And how much of that has been expended so far?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, yeah, the memo that you're referring to was at the process when we were developing our advanced planning documents to the federal government, so those were the budgets that were submitted at that time. We've recently looked at, after a quarter of spending, what do we anticipate the spending to be? And so for the Integrated Service Delivery System, we're expecting the spending in federal fiscal year 18. So that's an important note. That goes into one quarter of state fiscal year 2019. 83 for ISDS, it's $79 million is what we're projecting. For our licensing efforts, we're projecting to spend $3.8 million. And then for METS, the current the budget was around that $50 million that you referred to, but the spending is estimated to be $38.5 million.
Representative Dean.
All right. And on the, you said about around four for licensing and around 79. Is that state and federal or just federal?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, that's the total. So that's the combination of the state and federal. I don't immediately have available in front of me the breakdown, but about 90% of that is federal resources for both of those.
Follow up, Representative Dean?
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I was looking through here for my favorite bar chart, which is the one that shows the federal and state spending for METS. And I don't know, is it in here?
Up on the screen.
Oh, there it is. My favorite one. And on the development, which is the first vertical column for each fiscal year, what you see across is 40-60, 40-60, up a bump, up bump for development. And then next year, it always goes way, way down. And every year I've been here, next year always goes way, way down. But then we get into that year, and it's back up again. And then next year, it's going to go back down. So it's like every year, next year, we're not going to spend as much development money on this thing. And so that's always been frustrating and kind of curious to me, but I'm a very visual person, so I really appreciate this because it looks at spending over time and what's happening to that money, but also where that money comes from. But also, at a certain point, this continues to be spent within the IBM Curium platform and products. And I'm just wondering, did it ever make sense? Did anybody ever stop and say, you know, this is a Pontiac Aztec, and maybe we ought to change to some other vehicle or platform for moving forward? I know that that was never reissued as another RFP, but is that, did that ever come up? Or, you know, for moving forward, do you anticipate that? Because if we're spending another $200 million budgeted, and if we have, you know, a an administration with Governor Murphy or Governor Liebling might want to have different choices, how locked in are we to that spending and that platform?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative Deem, for the MEPS system, I know that the Department of Human Services at 2 points in time, I should clarify, I know that for the MEPS system, there prior to my being with the department, there were some evaluations about whether or not there should be a different software platform pursued for that. With the integrated service delivery system, one of the technical solutions that we're hoping to leverage is that IBM Curium. But we're also going to look at each individual functionality that we're hoping to develop, and we'll work in partnership with Minute to identify what is the right technical solution to support that functionality. So Curium is one of the technologies, not the only technology that would be pursued for that.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming and testifying. I'm thinking a little bit about Representative Hamilton and your constituents and sort of wanting a proof point, right, to share with people about how we proceed. And in my tenure, it seems like there have been a variety of examples, both in healthcare and in other platforms, where we, the state, have tried to advance a modernization around the technology that we use and a simplification of the policy that precedes that. I know I was involved in that back in 2010 when Governor Plenty was still in office. And at least in my experience, we are still struggling with this, and whether we bend it out to a private entity, which I think some people would prefer, or we keep it in the hands of state government or in partnership with some vended service, the aim that I think would be in all our interests and in your constituents' interests would be to make this more functional for people. Right? And it is hard for a committee like this to get our hands wrapped around that. And when I think about the longitudinal look, we haven't mastered it yet because it's not really our job. Our job is to fund it, right, to question it, to oversee it. But the administration's job to administer it and set it up and make it work. So I am really interested in a continued conversation from the administration about what's working and what's not working. What do we actually need if we want a usable, modern, front-facing and engaging government, right, that people can employ to get their stuff done? And I think that's what Minnesotans want. And, you know, we look at this in little windows of time, little snips of time. We're not engaged in it or immersed in it as you are. So it is hard for me to judge based on the moments of time, the news stories about who's done what right and wrong, to really get a handle on what is the underlying issue. I have my own thoughts about that. But as we move forward, in whatever form you can get that to us, I would really appreciate a candid assessment of what do we actually need to do to make sure that we're achieving the goal that I think our constituents want, that Minnesotans want. And I'm not sure I'm hearing that yet today.
Okay. Response, Ms. Weber or Mr. Paley?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I appreciate that opportunity to work collectively with you on that. and have that candid discussion.
Question for you, Mr. Paling. So what is the timeline for the rollout of the ISDS project?
Mr. Chair, right now we have a high-level roadmap, and we don't have a set timeline for the total rollout of ISDS. It's going to take the next 5 to 10 years.
So with that in mind, you're asking for a some certain or not, just for the next planning phase. I mean, we've had a number of years, 4 or 5 years, that you've been planning for this, and now you're looking at implementation. So I look at, you know, the issue with Minsure. We talked about Minlars just recently. You're asking for $55 million just for the 18 for METS improvements. You are looking at putting together systems that encompass humanity in Minnesota together in one system. This is another train wreck. How can you assure us that this isn't going to end up just like the other two that have been the topic of conversation for the last several years?
Mr. Chair, in relationship to the METS roadmap that you held up there, we've got a governance structure in place that meets regularly to plan that, and it's county, DHS, and MNIT involvement in that. And then we look through that, and we plan accordingly what we think we can deliver based on the budget that's been given to us. And that's kind of the process that we're taking. There's been much improvements in METS over the last year, and we're just continuing to make the improvements based on the prioritization that DHS and the counties and Minsure give us.
So, Mr. Paling, you're asking for $55 million just for the improvements to the METS system that you outline in this slide. What are you anticipating that the ask is for the next year? And obviously you're looking at what those improvements might be for 2019. So give us a glimmer or a glimpse in terms of what you're looking at for the subsequent years after 18.
Mr. Chair, I'm not familiar and in depth with the financial piece of it and the dollar amounts that we're asking for, and I don't think we put forward dollar amounts yet for next year.
Other agencies go through a various process in coordination with MNIT for approval of these programs. Does DHS do the same thing?
Mr. Chair, yes, they do.
And if DHS selects a vendor to do various work, what's your recourse if that vendor does not produce the anticipated project on time and within budget and as promised?
Mr. Chair, the contracts that the MNIT manages for DHS or for MNIT, we follow the state procurement process. I'm not, I don't know the detail of each contract to know the specific dollar amounts. We'd have to look at each one specifically.
Other questions from the members? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wondering, with those contract procedures, over the last several years, with all of the failures in the rollouts in METS and Minsure, how much money has the state recovered from contractors?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I am not aware of that, but we can follow up and see if that information could be collected. Looking across state agencies, is that the nature of your question?
Representative Zerwas?
Yeah, and if you have a ballpark, I mean, we've spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on products that have not worked. Have we recovered $10 million, $20 million, $5 million, or zero?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I am not aware of any recovery that the Department of Human Services has pursued. We can request from the Department of Administration if there are other state agencies that may have pursued recovery of resources related to vendors not performing.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask one more.
Representative Zerwas.
Recovery pursued. So is it your understanding in that in all of the failed rollouts of Minsure and Mets and all of the missed timelines and all of the failed launches the Department of Human Services has never tried to pursue recovering money from vendors?
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I've only been with the agency for 2 years, so I want to make sure I follow up on this for you and give you the most accurate information.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwin.
Is there anyone else from Minute in the audience that might be able to answer that question? I think that's a pretty important question. We're talking about a pattern of abject and absolute failure. And we talk about, well, this vendor didn't deliver and that vendor didn't deliver. And if now we're sitting here and saying that not only was it a failure and this vendor didn't deliver and that vendor didn't deliver, but we never even bothered to try to get our money back, I think that's a pretty good question. I think that's a pretty big issue. And if there's anyone that's with Minute that could provide some insight here today, I think that would be helpful.
Mr. Paley.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will take that back and get an answer for you.
Any follow-up questions or us?
Well, I say it's odd, right? I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars over years, thousands and thousands of Minnesotans not being able to work the basic function of the social services programs and not able to sign up for insurance that have gone uncovered. And we don't even know if we asked for our money back. I mean, you can't make it up. You can't make it up.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when you're going back to Minute, I guess to calmly paraphrase what Representative Zeroff was saying is, in the contracts that you have with the contractors, is there what are the clawback, if there aren't any clawback provisions in the contracts that allow for that? And then, obviously, we'd like to hear back that in the contracts going forward that those clawback provisions would be in there that would allow us in a civil proceeding to recoup some of that money. That's what I would like to see. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll try and say this again, maybe just in with a little more clarity, because I hear Representative Zerwas in your voice, the exasperation of emotion. And I know, like Minnesotans, people that live in the district I represent who have been frustrated with health care, with MnLARS, et cetera, right? So we have a job to do. And so I hear your frustration. And at the same time, having been here now for 12 years, I think the technological failures that we've experienced they transcend both administrations, they transcend both parties. And if what we want is to make this effective for Minnesotans, I'm hoping that we can together dig in a little bit further, work with the administration, figure out what is actually happening, what is wrong with, if there's something wrong with the procurement process, if it is the timelines we didn't give the Department of Administration or DHS or Minsure much time to stand up Minsure. We asked you to stand that up in a very short amount of time. So there are things that I think we're responsible for as a legislature, and there are parts of this process going forward that we're struggling with. And, you know, I don't know if other states are struggling with it as well, but I do think it if we want to make this work for people, then we got to dig down beneath sort of this momentary indignation and figure out what the problem is. So, again, to my request, right? And I don't mean it in any critical way. This just isn't a good pattern for us, for the state of Minnesota, and I think we have it in us, right, to figure it out, but we're not getting maybe the enough information to help you with that.
Okay. Comment from either of you? Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know I also hear the exasperation. I also hear some exacerbation.
Thank you.
You know, and you know, Representative Zerwas, we all feel very frustrated. And the thing you've identified that we, you know, I also have had that question, why haven't we gone after some of these vendors and what's wrong with our contracting process? I mean, that's an absolutely valid question. But I think it's really overstating it, you know, the abject and absolute failure and all that. You know, yeah, it's been frustrating, and there were some real bad, you know, mistakes in the beginning. But, I mean, Minsure and Metz are, we're getting there. It's been a lot slower than it should have been, but it's getting there. You know, so that's where I hear some exacerbation of the problem, perhaps. You know, let's not, you know, overstate it, because there's plenty that we need to do that without overstating it. There's plenty of problem there that we need to get our arms around. I mean, it's very hard for us as a legislature to manage this stuff. I mean, we're lay people. We're not deeply, most of us are not coders. We're not really equipped to understand the technological pieces of this. I don't know how we as legislators are supposed to really get into this and manage it, and yet the public expects us to do that. It's very difficult. So one question that I have, though, in addition to that statement, which piece of this, if any of it, deals with our PMAP program, deals with our, you know, we have our system under our Medicaid program, under our Minnesota Care program, of that we hire HMOs to for the most part, to carry out our public programs. And I've asked the question a number of times and never really gotten a satisfactory answer of what it costs us and what the systems are that we have to have in place to manage all of that. And I'm not sure if I understand what you've just presented well enough to know if any of this relates to that system. I know you've got some pieces in here about, you know, providers, paying providers. I don't know if that's just fee for service or, I mean, does any of this relate to contracting with HMOs and managing the HMOs?
Ms. Weber?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, not explicitly the contracting or managing the HMOs. I would have to follow up on that request related to the information and costs that you have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Representative Liebling's comment, the role that the legislature, first of all, the indignation regarding all of this, it does fall on leadership. The leadership of Minute, whoever appoints the leadership of Minute, I mean, it all falls with the top. That's the role of leadership. And as far as the role that legislature plays in this, how we manage that is, I almost feel like we're asked to put gas in a car that's not running. And so what we need to do is we need to ask some questions about the contract. You know, are they using contract labor? What's the qualifications? What are the goals? The long-term goals. I've got a whole bunch of questions here, but I'm just going to email them out of respect for other members' time on that. Don't want to gotcha or do any of that stuff. I would actually like the answers to it, so I'll be sending those over to you. But this is the role of legislature right here, is that we don't, you know, I guess blank check is a term you can use or whatever, but there should be some strings attached to, okay, how is that funding going to be used, and, you know, what are the results? What are we going to measure? I guess it would come to. So I think actually we do have kind of a direct role in all of this.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zerwas, this is some of the same frustration, though, that I was feeling yesterday about that building. Why weren't we going back and looking at who was responsible for the fact that we're basically looking at a third of the cost of a building that's only 13 years old? And I think some of the leadership does come to us and saying, okay, there needs to be something in those contracts that when vendors are not living up to their obligations, that we're going back and saying, you need to fix it. So thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, now I'm just getting redundant from the last two speakers. You know, we also have to be honest with ourselves. I mean, if we're not capable of doing it, then we shouldn't be doing it. You know, we want to be on the leading edge, but not the bleeding edge. And, you know, I'm using the examples of Minlars. One of the gentlemen that was in the office that I occupy today, he said he sells cars for a living. And he goes, you know, if we do business in South Dakota, we can go right in and they'll print off the title and everything right there. And yet Minnesota's struggling with all this and millions of dollars later. And so, like we're talking about, we shouldn't have to, as legislature, be in the position to micromanage things, but we can ask the tough questions to make sure we have the proper management structure in place. And this is very serious, and when I brought it up to my constituents today, they asked, what are you thinking? You know, again, it's failed twice in a big way. Why are you even considering moving forward? And that's what I mean. There's a lot of healing that has to take place before I'm able to support any funding options for Minotaur or others, Mets or Minotaur, whatever we call ourselves.
I have Zerwas, Franzen, and Liebling, and then I'd like to have them continue with the remainder of their presentation. So, Representative Zerwas.
Well, and I'll be brief, Mr. Chairman. I know my language is tough around the idea that it's been an abject failure, but I'll double down on it. Our predictions and enrollment have been wrong since day one, off by a huge percentage. We had a rollout that did not happen with a system that was not live and was not ready to go. When I met with our counties with the Met system a year after rollout, there was an 86% error rate on the data that they were using when they were trying to enroll people in public programs through Mets. They had 37 workarounds where what they used to be able to do, remember the old system we heard about that was green screen and nobody could fix it, and you had to bring in the guy with the ponytail who'd been retired a decade to fix it. Well, now they said, what we used to be able to do by clicking one button, I have a workaround. And the workaround is these flow charts that I follow so that what used to be done in one click of a computer screen, I can now get done in 2 or 3 minutes. And there was 37 of them for updating someone's address, updating a life event, if they had a child or if they adopted a child, if they got married or if they got divorced. I would be interested if someone wants to point to the great success, let's take some time and hear about it. But in every interaction I've had with people that tried to utilize the platform to purchase, people that were told they purchased only to find out they really hadn't, to checks that have been cashed but insurance not provided, to on the public end, significant and persistent errors. Yes, abject failure from beginning to end, and the problems aren't going away.
Representative Friends.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This situation reminds me of those, Sally and Tom are wanting to remodel their home, and they contract with a contractor. Don't know really much about that contractor. The contractor shows up, does a little bit of work, really slow. They're given an estimate, right, of whatever it is. And contractor comes back and says, well, sorry, but the price is going to go up because I need more time. And the homeowners are like, but this is what we were told it's going to cost and when it's going to be done. And you said you'd be able to deliver. And the contractor says, no, it's not going to happen. I need some more money. And the homeowners are like, well, my house is like, it's in disarray. I can't even live here. You know, what are we going to do? And homeowners are like, going to have to figure out how to get some more money. And pretty soon the contractor just doesn't show up to work anymore. Homeowners are like, what are we going to do? No, they're going to have to go to now another contractor and get another quote. And but for those homeowners, they've got some ability to sue that contractor that was bad, take them to court. There'd be repercussions. for that contractor, and there'd be the ability for that homeowner to get their money back from that contractor. And yet the taxpayers of Minnesota, there is no repercussions for that contractor. The taxpayers are, well, now another $200 million. You know, $200 million, you guys, I am very passionate about our home-based community services. I live next to two homes, and to have to constantly tell them that we are not giving them the increase that they deserve, but yet we've got more money to put toward IT projects that just never seem to deliver. I find it really hard to believe that we're constantly having to just reinvent the wheel when we've got other states that are doing the same thing. There's got to be a better way that we can pair up with states and say, here's what we're doing. Here's what we would like to do. What are you doing in your state? And be able to grab some of that already developed platform and bring it back into our state to save money, to save reinventing the wheel. And I think that we're all very frustrated here with the fact that we're just blowing money that is finite. It's a resource that's not easy to come by. And it's rather sad that we're just constantly just plummeting down the drain. So that's all I've got. But, you know, too bad for those taxpayers. There's no way to sue the bad people that are just constantly raking us over the coal.
Representative Liebman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Franson, I hope there is. We all hope there is. I mean, you know, nobody should be allowed to get away with, you know, promising to do something and then not delivering and then just walking away. I mean, that's just plainly not acceptable. But I just wanted to respond to a couple things. First of all, absolutely, you know, this is a leadership issue and making sure that this is all, you know, that the right people are hired, that we have the right contracts in place. I think it was Representative Lunan that was talking about this. The problem is for us as legislators, we can ask all the hard questions. We try. We all try. Bipartisanly, we don't necessarily have the ability to get the answers, and we don't necessarily even know if we're asking the right questions. It's just really hard. I think, you know, we're all feeling that frustration, and we felt it for a long time over different issues. You know, maybe it's partly the nature of our role. But I just want to say that I think some of what we have to grapple with is what's the alternative? You know, you know, the world is changing. It isn't just that DHS wants to do this and that. It's that, you know, the world is changing. Technology is advancing. You know, people are demanding different kinds of access to technology, and things are supposed to move really fast and smooth in a way that 20 years ago maybe people wouldn't have expected. You know, I know that my constituents expect answers to their emails really fast. You know, different when people used to send letters. And so, you know, the real question is, you know, what can we do as a legislature to have a positive impact on this? And what I would submit to you is that our role, the thing that we can do the best, I mean, we should always be asking the hard questions, absolutely, and try to understand and make sure that things are in place to the best we can. But our role is to try to simplify what's being asked for so that we don't have to have technology that has all these incredible complications. Whoever over here said, aren't other states doing this and can't we? I've asked that same question and have not been able to really get a good answer to that. But, you know, each state does have its different way of approaching things, and you know, that's sort of the answer that I've gotten when I've asked. But, you know, once again, I just want us to go back to the fact that we're asking our systems to do incredibly complicated stuff, and we keep changing what we're asking it to do as well. And our going back to MNsure and what the Affordable Care Act tried to do was take this crazy system of healthcare that's based on insurance, which, frankly, insurance doesn't even belong with healthcare. They're complete different things. Insurance shouldn't even be healthcare shouldn't even be based on an insurance system because everybody needs it. Everybody's going to need it. If they don't need it now, they'll need it later. So why do we even have insurance? But we do. And in order to keep insurance in the game and have it work a little bit better for people, the ACA tried to do that. And, you know, I think about this as trying to build a bus by starting with a bicycle chassis. It doesn't make a lot of sense. If you want a bus, you start with a bus chassis. You don't take your bicycle and try to remodel it. And that's kind of, I think, what we've sort of done, trying to make our insurance system actually work for people for health care. And it's just too darn complicated. We need to back up, get the complication out of the system to the best we can, and then our technology lift will be a whole lot easier.
Mr. Paling, I'm going to let you jump into the minute review.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that you wanted a overview of the minute at DHS, and I got a brief overview just a few minutes here. Minute has a very large portfolio of applications and projects at DHS. We manage over 375 applications, including 12 major systems. These major systems are large and complex. Most of them exchange information with multiple other systems from multiple source agencies, and they are subject to many state and federal regulations and requirements. As you've already heard, these major systems, along with the 375 applications, support services for over 2.8 million Minnesotans, and they are used by 31 county, tribe, and state workers, more than 200,000 providers, and many other DHS and MnSure partners. Our project portfolio is managed through a governance structure with DHS and MnSure. We don't do that alone. We manage it with DHS and MnSure. We have approximately right now 183 active projects, including multiple modernization projects. We also have 137 projects in the queue, which means we aren't working on those now. Those are requests from DHS for us to work on, and we're not working on them at this time. You've already heard us talk about the modernization efforts. Our project work is also managed through the governance structure. Currently, in the Integrated Services Delivery System, we have 53 active projects. The METS system, we have 29 active projects. Direct Care and Treatment, we have 36 active projects. Additionally, we have 35 other active projects that Minute manages outside of the modernization efforts, but within the governance process. Minute has the responsibility to provide the resources for several IT disciplines to support those 375 applications and IT project work at DHS. Included in those responsibilities are portfolio and project management, business analysis, architecture, development, operations, quality assurance, security, IT finance, and communication management. Using all these disciplines, we develop and integrate custom and off-the-shelf software applications required for the operation of DHS business, and we also provide operational support, including system monitoring, executing batch procedures, data management, database administration, upgrading and patching infrastructure components, and providing help desk support for end users. I'm going to just touch briefly on a few of those responsibilities for an example. For example, portfolio management provides support for IT project work. We do the request intake work of projects, enterprise-wide prioritization, allocation of resources, and regularly tracking and reviewing of projects and monitoring them. We build security into our systems to ensure DHS can deliver services safely while protecting citizen data and meeting compliance needs. Working with our business partners and Minute Enterprise Services, our architects formulate business and technology architecture, patterns, standards, and services, leveraging common technologies and architecture that span data, infrastructure, and application domains. Quality assurance practitioners execute documented and repeatable test processes to ensure the quality of the product that is being delivered into production is accurate with the least amount of risk possible. In operations, we also provide infrastructure and production support and maintenance and IT security for all 375 applications. Moving to the last slide that we have today, I want to share information about the IT resources that support DHS. The resources that do all the IT work to support DHS are obtained in basically three ways. We have state IT staff that are employees of Minute, such as myself. We also supplement with IT staff augmentation, and we have a few major IT services contracts. Currently, we have 711 state staff. 162 IT augmented staff, and three major services contracts supporting DHS. The three major contracts that we currently have is IBM Curum, which we've been talking about a little bit today, PricewaterhouseCooper, and NetSmart. The state staff augmentation and services contracts support all 375 applications in the 183 active projects that we've been speaking about. That's what I have related to that. So just both Ms. Weber and I wanted to thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you today, and we're ready for any more questions you have at this time.
Mr. Paling, I've got just a couple questions. So just relevant to that last slide, how many open FTE slots do you have right now?
Currently, state open positions, I have approximately 145.
In addition to the 873?
In addition to the 711, yes.
Okay. I want to back up a slide. I have a couple questions with regard to the scopes of projects that you've got going on.
Sure.
So you've got 137 projects in the queue. How many of those projects that are in the queue are legislative priorities that this legislature has already passed, but you have yet to start an action plan on?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the answer to that. We'll have to get back to you. I'm not sure how many of those 137 are legislatively mandated projects.
But it would be fair to say that a goodly portion of them are those that were enacted into law by the legislature.
Mr. Chair, I can't say that for sure. We'll have to look at it and get back to you.
And now, as you've made presentation, your desire is to undertake a very broad and deep ISDS program. While already you have 137 projects in the queue and 183 projects that are active, you get a little more of the sense of the skepticism from the members around this table in terms of, with that slide alone, how on earth do you hope to put credibility to an ISDS system when you've got this type of a work scope project in front of you?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, several of the 183 projects are part of the modernization effort right now.
Could you, for the committee's benefit, articulate in correspondence back to us what those contain?
Mr. Chair, the figures that I gave you earlier are the specific ones I have right now. In the MMIS area, there's 30 active projects. Some of those are modernization efforts, and some of them are the legacy system efforts, and that's the same with each of these areas. There's 53 in the integrated services delivery system one, and 29 active projects in METS. Those would be all modernization-type projects. Direct care and treatment has 36. So there's a combination of legacy-type projects in there and then also modernization projects. I don't have the breakdown specifically of how many is each today. I can get that, though.
Thank you. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank the testifiers for coming in today. I don't want to be remiss if I didn't point that out. This wasn't obviously an easy situation to come into. I want to respond to Representative Liebling's comments on, you know, as legislators, what we can do. And I actually like working with you because of your experience. And you and I have talked before, and but the obvious solution, one of the obvious solutions is bringing in contractors. I take a look that we've got 873 IT people here. We're hiring for every possible thing that can happen. I run a business. I can't do that. So what happens is that I have essential services that I hire and contract for, and I reallocate the resources I'm using for in-house staff. And what I do is I bring in contractors that have expertise in that specific area simply because they end up with so much more experience in that specific area. You get a much better product because of the increase in expertise. I strongly sense what we've got is it's like bringing in a carpenter to do work, and the only tool that carpenter owns is a hammer. And so every problem becomes a nail. And that's how we're going to solve it. That's what it seems like. And then to the comment about insurance and how we got to get insurance out of it because everybody needs health care, well, heads up. Health insurance isn't a right. Health care isn't a right. God, I wish health was a right, but it's not either. And, you know, if we're going to base on that, then I can tell you I'm real interested in starting food insurance because everybody needs food. So we go through and we set up, and you buy food insurance. You got an annual policy. You got a deductible. You've got a maximum out of pocket. And then you tell me, after everyone's met their maximum out of pocket, what's going to happen to the service level and the cost of food the last half of that year, and everyone's buying habits when someone else is paying for it. And I think everyone knows what the answer to that is. So no, we have to bring the market back in, not keep trying to remove the market out.
We'll give you two the final thoughts. Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and members, we just want to thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today, and in particular for the offers that you've all made to work with us as we pursue this these modernization efforts. One of the acknowledgments related to our legacy system needs and some of the projects that need to be accomplished within that, that's something that we're also grappling with, is how do we balance maintaining those existing systems and doing development work that's necessary in them while also working to achieve the modernization of the technology as well.
Mr. Paley.
Mr. Chair and committee members, on behalf of Minute, we're looking forward to working with you also. Thank you.
Members, our next meeting is tomorrow, Thursday, March 1st. We'll be hearing an update on the February forecast, CHIP, and the Minnesota Premium Security Plan. With that, members, we are adjourned.